Welcome to Nerds at Church, a queer feminist podcast diving deep into faith, nerdery, and the Bible. I'm Pastor Emily, and I use pronouns like they, them, theirs.
And I'm Pastor Kay, and my pronouns are she, her. In this episode, we'll discuss astronomers. And also, I think some astrophysicists.
Yeah, a little bit. But mostly astronomers. Yeah. I think kind of they technically count.
There's an overlap.
I don't know. Yeah. Check out the episode description for links to any references we make in this episode.
So we thought we'd start out with some historical examples of astronomers. And in order to put these folks in literally any kind of order, the way we wound up going with was when did they achieve their highest level of education? Because birth dates actually don't really line up to when they got active in the scientific and academic world. But when they achieved their highest level of education usually does. So our first astronomer today is Henrietta Swan Leavitt, who was born in 1868 and died in 1921 and received her bachelor's degree in 1892. She worked with Annie Jump Cannon, who I'll talk about in just a moment, as a Harvard computer for many years. And she also contracted an illness in adulthood that led to her becoming mostly deaf, which she shared with Annie Jump Cannon. And several sources that talk about her and Annie Jump Cannon talk about how that actually kind of helped them focus on their work because they wouldn't be distracted by other stuff going on in the room. And Henrietta Swan Leavitt figured out how to measure massive distances in space by determining certain objects of known brightness called standard candles. And this method is still used today. And this allowed her to calculate the distance from us to the Small Magellanic Cloud and is the reason we know the approximate size of the galaxy. So this is a pretty big discovery. And due to her financial independence, when she first started working at Harvard as a computer, she started working as a volunteer and only later was paid. And for quite a while was paid, frankly, a pittance because she could afford it. And her father was a congregational minister and she remained active in the church throughout her life.
Oh, one of the male congregational ministers. Okay.
Yes, yes, there are a handful of those.
Those happen occasionally.
And a mathematician in Sweden tried to nominate her for a Nobel Prize in 1925, but those awards are not given out posthumously, and she had died of cancer a few years before. So there are actually several people on our list of folks to talk about today who many people have said totally should have received a Nobel at some point and unfortunately were never nominated. But Annie Jump Cannon, who Henrietta Swan Leavitt worked with extensively, was born in 1863 and died in 1941 and received her master's degree in 1907. And Annie Jump Cannon is best known for inventing star classification as it's now known, which is by level of magnitude, or basically how bright is it. And she did her undergrad at Wellesley College, and she was a valedictorian of her class. And afterwards, she returned home for about 10 years. But after her mother died, she sought a job and also some graduate classes to get out of the house. And she also, like Henrietta Swan Leavitt, was nearly deaf after contracting scarlet fever in 1893. And she threw herself into her work because of the difficulty she found with socializing after becoming deaf. And eventually she became one of the Harvard computers who collated and studied data gathered by male astronomers. And she was well known for being the fastest at sorting stars into their categories of magnitude. At one point she could sort 200 stars in an hour or 3 stars per minute, which was extraordinary because other people would take like 20 minutes to figure out one star.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know,
that's,
right?
That's really handy that they had those male astronomers to gather the data that they could then analyze.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the male astronomers got great at taking pictures of the stars. That was super helpful. And to this day, no one has classified as many stars by magnitude as she did during her lifetime. Yeah. In 1911, she became the curator of astronomical photographs at Harvard. And in 1914, she became a honorary member of the Royal Astronomical Society. And in 1938, she became an official astronomer at Harvard. And the word astronomer there is capitalized. It's a job title. And she was also known for her diplomacy in the workplace and brokering partnerships and exchanges between scientists and departments, which, given the fact that they were saying that about a deaf woman in academia at this time, that must have been extraordinary.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and then we have a astronomer who's becoming better known, I think. More folks these days have heard of her. Cecilia Payne Gaposchkin was born in 1900 and died in 1979 and completed her doctoral thesis in 1925. And she received the first doctorate in astronomy granted by Radcliffe College at Harvard. Cecilia was British, but she moved to the United States for better job prospects. Basically, she couldn't receive the education or the types of jobs that she wanted in Britain. And she discovered much of the chemical nature of the sun while she was doing her doctoral thesis. And she also associated the spectral classes of stars with their temperatures. So pairing the spectral class with the temperature, that was part of her work. And she made over 3 million stellar observations over the course of her career and focused primarily on very bright stars, which is to say those that are brighter than the 10th magnitude. And also she did some fairly extensive work in looking into variable stars, stars that seem to change over time as we observe them. And almost 2/3 of her observations were of the Magellanic Clouds. She spent her career at Harvard, but women couldn't be professors for her first few decades there. But while she was working in those first few decades, she published several books and also did a lot of research that is still useful today. Her male graduate advisor, Harlow Shapley, eventually made sure that her job title gave her enough prestige to choose her own research topics, which was very helpful. And she became the first female full professor at Harvard and the first woman to head a department at Harvard in astronomy, as you might imagine. She raised her children in the Unitarian Church, and she worked with the Quakers some as well. But she was agnostic for much of her adulthood after she did an interesting experiment as a student about prayer and her exams and prayer's effectiveness. Which I thought sounded super interesting. Wikipedia has more details on that. And one modern note about her family is that her granddaughter, who is also named Cecilia, is now a professor at Dartmouth in medieval and French history.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. All of these stories are just amazing. So next we have Vera Rubin, who was born in 1928 and died in 2016 and completed her doctoral thesis in 1954 at Georgetown University. And she was best known for her pioneering work in the movement of galaxies, especially about their rotation. Her father helped her build a telescope when she was a child, which sounds like a very sweet story, actually. And she went to Vassar for undergrad and Cornell for her master's, but she was not allowed to present a paper at the American Astronomical Society in the early 1950s because she was visibly pregnant at the time. And that paper turns out to have had some serious scientific impact, except for the fact that it kind of gotten forgotten about for several years because she wasn't allowed to present it. But when they found it later, they realized that the stuff it said was super useful. Princeton rejected her for doctoral studies in astronomy because Princeton was sexist about that kind of thing, also probably other things. And so she went to Georgetown instead, and she studied galactic movement there, and she also studied galactic clumping, which eventually led to discoveries about dark matter that we talked about with Dr. Katie Mack.
I was wondering, as you were talking about her, I was like, this sounds like a very important person in the larger study of dark matter and the discovery of dark matter.
She did not, to my knowledge, study dark matter because it wasn't a theory yet, but a lot of her work led to the theory of dark matter. And she also discovered early evidence of a supergalactic plane, which is the idea that several galaxies exist on one plane together. Sort of, it's part of how they clump. They clump into a plane.
Interesting. Like the solar system, as we talked about in our solar system episode, that like the planets are in the same plane for the most part.
She was the first woman to observe at the Palomar Observatory in 1965. And in order to work there, she made her own bathroom. I assume that that probably means that she just removed a sign on one of the bathrooms that labeled it for male astronomers and just used it herself. But I suppose she could have built her own bathroom, literally with her own two hands. It sounds like she would have been capable of it.
I mean,
it wasn't really specified.
But
I thought that was a great story, making your own bathroom, especially after we just watched Hidden Figures a few days ago.
Yes, shout out to the movie commentary.
Yeah. She worked with Jeffrey and Margaret Burbridge pretty extensively, studying galaxy rotation and the curves of spiral galaxies for several years. And she spent most of her career at the Carnegie Institute of Washington, and while her children were young, she did a lot of her work from home. So a little bit of a flash forward there. And her family was Jewish.
I'm glad that she was able to, like, help share the responsibility of parenting.
Exactly.
With, yeah, you know, the husband.
Yeah. And then we have Joan Feynman, who was born in 1927 and died in 2020 and completed her doctoral thesis in 1958 at Syracuse University. And Joan Feynman was an astrophysicist and the younger sister of the well-known male physicist Richard Feynman. I believe I've told the story of the interview he did on television after the Challenger disaster, where he dropped the rubber band into a glass of ice water to show what happens to rubber when it gets really, really cold.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that in the episode.
And her brother gave her a book on astronomy when she was young and also woke her up at night to show her auroras in the sky. But she was told by her parents that she shouldn't go into science because they didn't believe that women were physically capable of understanding the concepts of science. But eventually, she found some work of Cecilia Payne-Gaposchkin, and so she pursued science anyway because she realized that women could. She also did a year or so of work in anthropology with her first husband and was published for doing that, which I thought showed an interesting breadth of mind and study.
Yeah, and how, you know, wonderful of her to graciously
support his work,
allow him to work for a little while. Sure. Yeah,
exactly. She mostly studied the interaction of solar wind and Earth's magnetosphere during her career. She worked for NASA and several observatories, as well as Boston College at the start of her career before she landed at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California for the rest of her career for several decades. And she discovered a lot about the causes of auroras and also did a lot of work in space weather, and then later on did some work studying climate change. And her family was Jewish.
Nice.
There are so many historical astronomers to explore. We couldn't give equal attention to all of them, or else this episode would be, you know, 6 hours long. And so some other names you might want to explore would be Maria Mitchell, Wilhelmina Fleming, Carolina Herschel, Margaret Burbridge, who I mentioned earlier, Mary Somerville, Jocelyn Bell Burnell, and Antonia Mori. And there are even more than that, but those are the bigger names that came up.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Also, some honorable mentions for folks who are technically not astronomers, but have made very significant contributions to astronomy and space stuff. So Katie Bauman, who we mentioned briefly in last week's episode with Dr. Katie Mack. So Katie Bauman developed the CHIRP, which is the Continuous High Resolution Image Reconstruction using patch priors, which is an algorithm that made the imaging of the first black hole by the Event Horizon Telescope possible. So she got all of a sudden famous because her excited face was one of the main pictures that was passed around the socials.
Oh, social media.
With the discovery of the first image of the black hole. Yeah. So, and then with a shout out to Hidden Figures, which is our movie commentary, which will be coming out this month if it's not already out by now. It depends on how much time I have. But Katherine Goebel Johnson is one of the main characters in that, and her mathematical calculations of orbital mechanics were critical to the success of the first and subsequent crewed NASA spaceflights, trajectories, launch windows, and emergency return paths for Project Mercury. And she was the first woman in the editorial meetings at NASA, and also the first African-American woman.
Yeah.
And then Dorothy Vaughan was the first African-American woman to receive a promotion and supervise a group of staff. And she learned and taught Fortran, which is one of the early computer programming languages.
The fact that we have to explain that Fortran was one of the early computer programming languages makes me feel old, by the way, because that was definitely a language in use when I was a child.
I did not know about computer programming languages until
C++ was around. We had a Commodore 128 in the house when I was still quite young. So
that's fair. But Dorothy Vaughan became one of the first female coders and headed the programming section of the Analysis and Computation Division at Langley. And at the Museum of the Bible, there's an exhibit called Scripture and Science, Our Universe, Ourselves, Our Place, that has her personal Bible and her NASA retirement ID card,
cool.
Which is really cool. And I think they just opened the exhibit as a virtual exhibit as well.
Cool.
If I can find it again, we will link to that for you in the episode description. And then Mary Jackson was NASA's first Black female engineer. She was an aerospace engineer, and she worked to achieve the most senior engineering title available. And that included going to segregated schools that she technically wasn't allowed in because she's just awesome.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Katie Mack, who we are not talking about today because we talked to her last week. And you can check out last week's episode for more on Katie Mack. So as we dive into astronomers today, this is not a comprehensive list because I was just kind of like Googling around and one person would lead me to another, And I did do a couple intentional searches, but
yeah.
Just so you know, so if we're missing somebody, let us know who we're missing and we are glad to talk about them. Maybe we'll talk about them next episode if you tell us quickly enough.
Yeah, we are always happy to discuss more astronomers. Yeah.
It's true. I also kind of tried to do it via like date of most recent academic achievement or something.
Sure.
That's a little complicated, but tried. So first up is Jessica Mink, who was born in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1951 and received her Master of Science in Planetary Science from MIT. And Jessica was an astronomical software developer at Cornell University from 1976 to 1979 and was part of the team that discovered the rings around Uranus. And she was actually responsible for the data reduction software and the data analysis that made those discoveries possible, which is really cool. And then she returned to MIT, and at MIT, her work contributed to the discovery of the rings of Neptune. So she, in the planetary science, is a big ring person. I suppose she took seriously the, if you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. And liked the planet. Jessica has also written lots of software packages for astrophysics, including WCS Tools and RVSAO, which I have no idea what those are, but, you know, astrophysicists probably do.
Yeah.
And despite not having a PhD, she is a member of the American Astronomical Society and the International Astronomical Union. And so that's, I think, one of the things that's important for us to recognize. And you mentioned this, right? Like, I think the first person we talked about had a bachelor's. So the ways that people did and didn't have access to academics makes a big impact in the ways that academics does its own gatekeeping. And so it's just great to have like somebody who's in the IAU who, like, you don't have to have a PhD in order to be an astronomer.
Yeah,
which is
absolutely
cool. And Jessica came out publicly as trans at the age of 60 and has been pretty public in advocating for inclusion and diversity.
Awesome.
Within STEM and science stuffs particular. And then Priyamvada Natarajan was born in Coimbatore, India, and she received her PhD in 1998 from the Institute of Astronomy at Cambridge University. And she is a principal investigator for Harvard's Black Hole Initiative, which is a multidisciplinary initiative that brings together all sorts of different people, mathematicians, philosophers, scientists, all sorts, to study and research black holes and learn as much as possible about them.
Can I also just point out that principal investigator is a great job title? That sounds
right? Yeah. I know. I was like, ooh, nice. Yeah. Priyamvada's research focuses on the formation, fueling, and feedback from supermassive black holes over cosmic time. And she has published seminal papers in gravitational lensing and black hole physics, as well as papers on galaxy clusters, binary black holes, galaxy formation, and the history and philosophy of science. So she has a lot of research areas that kind of overlap and combine in wonderful ways. And she was the first woman in astrophysics to be elected a fellow at Trinity College in Cambridge, United Kingdom. And she wrote the book Mapping the Heavens, The Radical Scientific Ideas That Reveal the Cosmos. And it is basically a greatest hits of cosmological discoveries in the last century.
That sounds very fun.
That is just delightful. Yeah, yeah. I'm excited about it. And if you are interested in it, we finally have a bookshop.org affiliate link that is now live. And so our book list will be ongoing from this season, as well as getting a more comprehensive book and resource list on Patreon, and then a book list. If you use our links to buy a book, then I think we get like some number of pennies or something.
Yeah.
So just to throw that out there, if you are interested in Mapping the Heavens, because I definitely am. And then Rebecca Oppenheimer was born in New York, New York in 1972, and she received a PhD in 1999 from Caltech, and her thesis was on brown dwarf companions of nearby stars. And she is an exoplanetary scientist with the goal of finding life outside the solar system. So she also has like 3 patents for work that she did building instruments. And cool. She was a co-discoverer of the first brown dwarf, which is LIS-229b, which is really cool because I didn't know brown dwarfs exist, right? We talk about white dwarfs, but yeah. There's also brown dwarf.
And red.
Yes. Yeah, and red. And her research includes the first direct investigations of the atmospheric composition, chemistry, and physics of an extrasolar substellar object, which is kind of fancy language for looking at the atmosphere on exoplanets, on planets that are orbiting around stars that are not our sun.
Yes.
And she deployed the LIOT project, which is an attempt to build an instrument that can remove more of the starlight from images of nearby solar systems than has ever before been possible, so that you can get a better look at the planets. Ooh. And her team deployed Project 1640 at Palomar Observatory, which conducts remote reconnaissance of planetary systems around stars other than the sun. And it is specifically designed to image planets orbiting nearby stars and to acquire low-resolution spectra of them simultaneously. So helping get to observing the planets and not just how the stars are impacted by the planets.
Yeah.
And she built the starlight suppression system for the International Gemini Observatory Planet Imager Project, GPI. And her latest project is PARVI, the Palomar Advanced Radial Velocity Instrument, which is oh so many things. And on top of all of that, she came out as trans in 2014. So
awesome.
Has like all of this stuff that she's been doing, and it's
yeah, that's a very busy amazing.
Life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where like having kind of the highest academic achievement as the list is great, and then there are some people who are like, that's just the beginning of
what like no, absolutely,
yeah, which is so awesome.
That's sort of their kickoff usually. So
yeah. Yeah. And then Feryal Özel was born in Istanbul, Turkey in 1975 and received her PhD in 2002 from Harvard University. Her doctoral thesis was on the effects of the intense gravitational and magnetic fields of neutron stars. And Feryal is a faculty affiliate for Harvard's Black Hole Initiative. I found a lot of these astronomers through the Black Hole Initiative, but it's really cool because they're are so many different ways that they're coming at yeah, it.
Absolutely.
Which is, yeah. So I was just like amazed. And Feryal's research focuses on the physics of compact objects and high energy astrophysical phenomena.
Cool.
So black holes make sense within that. And she is widely recognized for her contributions to the field of neutron stars, black holes, and magnetars, which are, I looked it up, they're like neutron stars that have a huge magnetic field around them. And so magnetars are like
awesome
doing that. Yeah. Also, I think we have an introduction to make.
So my cats have not previously made an appearance on this podcast, and Calvin is still on the other side of the room looking out of the window, but Hobbs woke up from his nap and wanted to say hello to all of our listeners and is now sitting on my chest because how dare I not pay attention to him, which is fair. I can't argue with that.
Well, hello, Hobbs. You're wonderful.
Yes.
Maybe we will try to figure out how to make a link to a picture of you so that we can link to it in the episode description so people can see.
Oh, there are plenty of pictures. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And then finally, Ferdial is also the modeling lead and a member of the Event Horizon Telescope. And the Event Horizon Telescope got very well known with the first imaging of a black hole, but it basically turns the entire planet into a telescope. So you have 10 different places on Earth that are all observing in coordinated efforts so that it becomes like a ginormous telescope. And then people gather all of the things together and put all of the data together and mix it up and mash it up and get things like images of the black holes.
Wow.
Which is awesome. And then Emily Schaller was born in the U.S. and received her PhD in 2008 from Caltech, and she discovered why Pluto and Object X and Titan all have methane, which is to say they were formed with methane, but not big enough to hold onto it, as part of her research and doctoral studies. And she is mentioned in How I Killed Pluto and Why I Had It Coming by the male astronomer Mike Brown. And she discovered tropical clouds on Saturn's moon Titan, which is super cool. And her focus was on planetary science.
Awesome.
And then I just liked it because I read the book How I Killed Pluto. And so it's like, oh,
absolutely.
Look, an astronomer, I should definitely mention her. And then Leah Medeiros was born in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and received her PhD in 2019 from the University of California, and worked with Professor Ferial Ozel, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And a great opportunity to work with such a wonderful and well-known astronomer.
Yeah.
Leah's thesis was on modeling variability in black hole images. And so she was a member of the Event Horizon Telescope Collaboration and a co-lead on paper 6 from the Sagittarius A image. And so Sagittarius A, as we know, is the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. And that image was published with 6 papers. And so she's a co-lead on one of the papers that announced the discovery and imaging and stuff. And Leah developed an algorithm to sharpen the original image of M87, which is the first image of a black hole that we ever had, and it led to PRIMO, the Principal Component Interferometric Modeling, which is a machine learning-based algorithm to help sharpen the images of black holes in particular, but images taken from like the massive telescopes and stuff. And she has been working on testing gravity with EGT and M87. And then Amita Kuttner was born in North Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and received a PhD in 2019 from the University of California, Santa Cruz, and they researched black holes in the early universe. They are the co-founder of the Moonlight Institute, which explores frameworks to adapt to the climate crisis. And Amita served as interim leader of the Green Party of Canada from November of 2021 to November of 2022, and was the first transgender person and person of East Asian descent to lead a federal party in Canada, which is cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then Sarah Issaoun was born in Algeria in 1994 and received her PhD in 2021 from Radboud University, which is in the Netherlands. And Sarah is a leading contributor of the data calibration and imaging efforts that led to the first image of a black hole in April of 2019. And her research specialty is Sagittarius A, which we know is the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way. And she was part of the team that created the first image of Sagittarius A and is a member of the Event Horizon Telescope Collaboration and an associate fellow of Harvard's Black Hole Initiative. And then the final one that we have for this episode, though, feel free to tell us who we're missing and we might add them.
Yes.
Next week.
Astronomers are so awesome, we had to do 2 episodes on them.
I mean, yeah. And even if you don't get it in the time limit, we'll give you a shout out. Basically, anybody that contacts us, we're happy to give a shout out to.
Yeah.
Estelle Asmodel was born in Balliol, New South Wales in Australia in 1954 and is a PhD candidate in relativistic quantum information at Queensland University. Her research interest is in relativity and cosmology, and she is working privately on general relativity and quantum mechanics unifications for a variety of reasons. She was pursuing her PhD and then COVID happened and like changes and COVID and all sorts of things. But she is also Australia's first legally recognized transgender person registered with Births, Deaths and Marriages Department of New South Wales on October 13th in 1987.
Wow.
And Estelle is a dancer, activist, is in film, modeling, art, technology, music, author, and science. Like,
wow.
She is what we call a polymath, which I had to look up, which is somebody who has just like a broad range of interests and expertise.
Yeah.
And so she has a blog on astronomy stuff, as well as like a website for her art that she sells. Like
a Renaissance woman.
It's just a variety of things. And yeah, yeah, a Renaissance woman. Yeah. So I really like kind of ending with her because, again, it is someone who, for a number of reasons, among them transphobia and sexism in the institutional academics, does not have a PhD in astronomy. And at the same time, there is so much that she has done and so much research and knowledge sharing that she continues to pursue. So,
yeah.
First off, probably most importantly when it comes to fictional and pop culture astronomers is Ms. Frizzle. I don't know where any of us would be without Ms. Frizzle's guidance into space and cellular biology and everything between and beyond. So shout out to Ms. Frizzle for being an amazing astronomer and leading so many of us into a love for science.
Also, driving a magic school bus has to, like, be a special skill. That seems especially difficult.
It's true. I think you need, like, a special license or something to drive a bus, a school bus anyway, and then a magical school bus on top of that.
Right. Oof. So you all have probably gotten used to me talking about how awesome the book The Goblin Emperor is by Catherine Addison, but one of the characters that this book has is Videra Drazin. She is the Emperor's half-sister, and she is a somewhat secret scholar of astronomy in that women are discouraged from being scholars in that world, but she is working to change that. And later on in the book, she invites the Emperor to join her in watching a meteor shower with her telescope.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice. Also, shout out to the iconic queer and lesbian car of choice, Subaru, which is the name for Pleiades in Japanese. So yay to Subaru for holding true to the wonderfulness that is space and queerness.
Yeah. And then Contact, which is both a book by Carl Sagan and a movie starring Jodie Foster, has the character of Dr. Eleanor Arroway, an accomplished astronomer who is ridiculed by colleagues and the press for her interest in aliens, but is, of course, vindicated in the end.
When they make contact.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. And then Sally Ride, though an astronaut, technically definitely gets a mention because of how well known she is and has become in pop culture, not only with the beloved song 100 Tampons, which is all about how sexism plays out in NASA and...
Yeah, male scientists don't understand biology.
Well, they're just not as good at science as other normal scientists. And so just had no idea what needs Sally Ride might have in terms of menstruation while up in space. And so tied 100 tampons together and tried to offer her them.
Oh, goodness.
Male scientists. I mean, maybe they should just stay at home.
Yeah. And then from the early 90s, which was back when that sort of thing was happening, we also have the TV show Stargate SG-1, which has Samantha Carter, who is both a physicist and a pilot. And one of her areas of expertise is astrophysics, but she basically winds up being the hard scientist nerd of the team. So it's not just astrophysics that she's good at, but she has a lot of different scientific areas of study.
Nice. Mm-hmm. As is typical of normal astronomers,
of course.
Just are very learned in a variety of areas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it would not be an episode or indeed season of talking about stars and space and astronomy without talking about Xenon, girl of the 21st century. I know my fellow millennials, we loved those movies.
Absolutely.
Okay, maybe just I loved the Disney movies.
Especially the
in
first
that
one.
Time period. But I love Xenon. Yeah, especially the first one. The first one is particularly fantastic. But I love Xenon and the hijinks that she gets up to, but also the ways that her life living on a space station.
Very high jinks on a space station.
Yeah, very hijinks, but also helps broaden our understandings and like curiosity of space, and that she gets to look out and see space all the time.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So now we're going to dive into reading.
So our first Bible reading today is from Genesis chapter 16, verses 7 through 14. Hagar is seen by God and names God.
So this passage comes from a larger context, and part of what I love is Hagar is out in the wilderness at the epitome of distress, and it is precisely there, which, as we know, is one of the best places to see the sky and the stars and observe and astronomize. And God recognizes Hagar's distress, and an angel of God comes to her and gives Hagar new hope, not like Star Wars. Even as her circumstances still are awful. So it is, the story of Hagar is a complicated story with a lot of sexism, classism, racism, and yet it is also a story of persistence and of God coming to Hagar and talking to Hagar.
Yeah. And then in verse 10, where we read God's promise to Hagar, this promise very strongly echoes God's promise to Abraham earlier. And you may remember that in the promise to Abraham, God compares his descendants to stars in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Also, I just love that Hagar gets to name God, and yeah. And that the name that she's the first person biblically to name God, and the name that she chooses is Elroy, which is the God who sees me.
Yeah.
Or God sees me. And there is something beautiful about the cosmic nature of a God who sees a tiny individual human, and the gift and what is at play for that, and what it means for the world that this woman who has been enslaved and escaped and
yes.
for complicated and difficult reasons has to go back is the one who names God.
Yes.
It's powerful. Yeah. Our second reading is Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 8. Paul reminds us that as a body is made up of many parts, so do we all have a variety of roles.
And this reading starts off a little iffily, you might say, by Paul saying, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. But also, we do think that if you have gifts, you should be able to use them, and you should also be able to get education to use them even better. So thinking of yourself more highly than you ought to does not include knowing that you have gifts and going out to get an education to use them better.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to like all of these exhortations to be humble, is part of being humble is recognizing when you have gifts and skills and interests and passions and calls.
Yeah.
And pursuing those. So, and that's what a lot of the astronomers we talked about today did with their lives. They recognized gifts and skills and passions in themselves and pursued them.
Yeah.
I also was looking at that and looking at the second half of that passage, verses 6 through 8, where Paul is talking about the different gifts, prophecy in proportion to faith, ministry in ministering, teacher in teaching, and the ways that Paul talks about all of these different ways of living out our call and living into our own passions and interests and talents and skills, and the beauty that they are not based on gender, but based on who we are as whole people.
Yeah, absolutely.
That the teacher is the teacher, not a particular type of teacher based on identity. And there's complications in that, but I love that that is what it is. It is, if you are a teacher, you are a teacher.
Yeah.
And then Romans 16, verses 1 through 16, Paul greets people and apostles of many genders.
Yes. And of course, part of the reason why this passage is well known is verse 7, which includes Paul greeting Junia. And some Bible translations, and I apply the word translation loosely in that case, but some Bible translations change the name Junia in this verse to Junius, which sounds like a male name under the naming conventions of that time and place, but there are no actual historical records of guys named Junius or people named Junius in that time and place or anywhere that the Greek language was used, basically, that we have historical records of. Whereas the name Junia for women was super popular. And in fact, I also happen to know at least one pastor with a daughter named Junia now. But
yep, I love that.
Yeah.
Named on purpose.
Yes.
Because of this.
For this verse. Yeah. And that just goes to show how far some people will go to hide their head in the sand about who can be an apostle, who can be an astronomer, that sort of thing.
Yep. And I was looking at that verse too, and just thinking about the lengths to which the church and history in general and the patriarchy in which we live have gone to erase women from history and from the Bible and to erase their accomplishments.
Yeah.
And so I love this verse specifically for Junia, who is an apostle and is clearly called apostle.
Yeah. And now, as we continue to reach for the stars, it's time for our Muppets moment. And our question for today is, which Muppet would make the best astronomer? Emily?
Okay, there are so many amazing options for this. Mm-hmm. So I do think that Miss Piggy would be a delightful astronomer. I think she would be one of the, like, I'm going after the big stuff and I'm not stopping and everybody better make way when I need the telescope.
I also now have the mental image of her with a sledgehammer making her own bathroom, but...
Yes, you know, I think she would do great at making her own bathroom. And I think, so in the, like, Muppets Babies, I don't know if you watched Muppets Babies.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. That was my initial introduction to Muppets.
Oh, nice. I think it maybe was for me, too. But Skeeter,
yes,
is Scooter's twin sister and is, like, sporty and stuff. And I just think, like, her spirit and her, like, spunk would work well for astronomy.
Also, it's super handy to have a brother who would be willing to organize all of your research data and, like, you know, take pictures of stars or whatever for you when necessary. So
yeah,
to do all this.
Yeah, I think he would. I think he would really support her in the work.
Absolutely.
That she's clearly set up to.
Yeah. Yeah, I immediately went to Sesame Street for this for some reason. And while I'm sure that Julia the Muppet could be a great astronomer with her special interests and ability to concentrate, I don't know her as well as some of the other family from Sesame Street. And it also occurs to me that Elmo, whose pronouns are Elmo, would make an excellent astronomer because Elmo has that sense of wonder and astonishment at the universe. And Elmo could help everyone else keep their spirits up while they continue to do research and would always be willing to reach out for more information and ask questions, which is at the heart of what being a good astronomer and a good scientist is all about.
It's true. It's true. I think you're right. I would love Elmo's astronomy. And Elmo is just so good. Elmo is such a good combination of caring and
wonder
and curiosity.
Yeah.
I love it. Thanks for joining us. Our theme music was by Rachel Meyer Lachlan. Our Muppets music was by Brenda Boss, and our seasonal artwork was by Pace Warfield. Catch us next time when we'll dive into male astronomers. I know, there are a few out there. This podcast has been produced by us, Emily Ewing and Kay Roloff. For more fun, check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and Blue Sky at Nerds at Church, or contact us at nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
Also, if you like what you've heard, rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you want access to our uncut episodes, merch discounts, movie commentaries, and more, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsatchurch. Starting at just $5 per month, it's cheaper than having to build your own bathroom when you start working at a new observatory. Yes, I know I keep harping on that story. It's amazing.
So true.
Yeah.
But it's just such, yeah. Also, let us know on Blue Sky, Facebook, or Twitter which Muppet would make the best astronomer.
Absolutely. As the ancient Christian said,
Pax vobiscum.